One of you has a question about amphibians.
My name is Morris. I am 6 years old, and I have a question about why salamanders have to live in wet habitats.
Stick around after this episode to learn more about salamanders. BUTY is supported by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. This is But Why, a podcast for curious kids from Vermont Public Radio. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today, we're going to bring you a special episode in between our regularly scheduled shows. When I'm not working on But Why, I have a regular job making a radio show for VPR. It's called Vermont Edition, and on that show, I interview all kinds of people who have connections to Vermont and New England. We talk about politics, breaking news, arts, culture, sports, and anything else you can think of. The other day, I got to talk with two brothers who I thought you might enjoy hearing from. Chris and Martin Kratt are better known together as the Kratts. They have spent the last 20 years making educational TV shows for kids that introduce you to all kinds of animals around the world. The show you might see these days is called Wild Kratts, and it's a PBS kids show. They've also done shows called Zaboomafoo, Kratts Creatures, and Be the Creature. Martin and Chris spent a lot of their summertime as boys in a place in Vermont called the Northeast Kingdom. It's a very rural and still kind of wild part of the state, up near the Canadian border. So we're going to play you my interview with them in this special episode, and they answered a lot of questions from kids who called in. Martin Kratt started our interview by telling me about how those summertime adventures in Vermont were really important in getting him and his brother interested in animals.
We grew up in New Jersey, right? So we had some wildlife, you know, but it was, you know, box turtles in the backyard, frogs and stuff. And what we ended up doing, our parents ended up getting some property in Northeast Kingdom, and we would go up there as soon as school let out and camp out all summer long, you know, so it was like getting water from the old farm well and just being out in nature. So we'd see porcupines, raptors, you know, we really got to go wild and just run around and experience nature.
Yeah, there was no building whatsoever. Yeah. So we had a pop-up trailer and a bunch of tents. We had a potty tent with a little portable potty in it. And,
that's pretty and good, though. That's practically civilization.
Yeah. Yeah. So we did. We lived there for 2 months.
Yeah, and we learned a lot of things, like if you left your tent open during the day, by nightfall there'd be a lot of snakes inside.
Really?
Yeah, so
you learned that by experience.
Oh, we learned that, yeah. And
so
you know,
did
we also
you do that
got
on
a,
purpose?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because it was an easier way to find snakes because they were all hiding in the grass. But if you left the tent open, they'd crawl in and then you'd see all the snakes. And I think also we got a lot of good training for our creature adventures, you know, for camping out. Because when we were developing our ideas for children's wildlife films for our first series, Kratts Creatures, we would spend 6 months camping out in the Amazon, in the Peruvian Amazon, you know. So our early training in the Northeast Kingdom prepared us for that. I really believe it.
You must have also had parents who tolerated this kind of behavior or who appreciated that their sons were going to open the tent so that the snakes could come in. And did they enjoy that, Chris, or did they just tolerate it?
No, they did enjoy it for sure. One of the reasons they originally came to Vermont was because they were into skiing. They were part of a ski club and a boating club. They were into sailing. So they liked the adventure sports that Vermont offered. So yeah, that was one of the reasons we were here in the first place. And yeah, we would bring our dogs up and they were totally game at having one of our...
We had a St. Bernard that really liked porcupines and never learned her lesson.
Yeah.
Like a lot of trips, you know, to the vet, taking out the deep ones. Yeah.
And we had a dog that... We had a dog that had puppies underneath the trailer one year, and that was really exciting.
Yeah. And yet you didn't become veterinarians. Instead,
well,
you
became I almost did. I was at Duke studying to be a veterinarian, getting ready for vet school. I wanted to do something with endangered species, veterinary medicine. But then I took a course on amphibian ecology, where we just looked at all the all the amphibians, the frogs and salamanders in North Carolina. And I was taking a course on a video course, too. So I ended up making a video about hellbenders, which are 3-foot-long salamanders that live in the Appalachians, southern Appalachians. And that kind of switched my thinking, you know.
So. To TV star.
No, not at all. Really just because at that time we realized, that was like in the late 80s, and there were no kids' wildlife shows. And we were talking and we realized their kids are the number one group of people who love animals, and nobody's making a show just for them. So that's kind of how we got on that track. And our goal was to just introduce kids to all the amazing animals with whom we share this planet, and so they could learn about them and hopefully, you know, get a connection with them that would last a lifetime. So that's something we could do for endangered species, and then all the kids who watch our shows, who knows what they could do.
Here's a clip from the beginning of an episode of Wildcrats focusing on rhinos.
The rhino's horn, its impressive size, and its charging power make the rhino one of the most impressive animals on Earth. Imagine if we had the creature powers of the rhino. What if?
All right, now picture Chris and Martin Kratt have transformed into their animated alter egos to investigate the powers of the rhino, and we are deep into this world of the rhino now. And let's go to Edward, calling in from Waterbury Center. Hi, Edward. Go right ahead.
Hi, guys. First off, I'd like to say big fan. My kids love your guys' show, any one of them. And my daughter had a question for you. We've got a couple dogs and a couple cats, and she was curious what kind of pets you guys have.
Oh, hey, Edward, how's it going? Well, I have 2 cats right now.
That's
Martin, yeah.
And dog recently died, so I don't have a pet right now. But we like to travel on adventures and see animals in the wild too. So that's what I've been doing a lot of lately.
Yeah, we also got that question from Ben in Montpelier, who wanted to know what pets you have at home. And it's curious because you guys do so much creature adventure. Do you see, so Martin, you have the 2 cats. Do you see your cats as wild creatures, or are they just the same pets that everybody has at home?
Oh, yeah. Well, I do see some similarities. Like my cat, for some reason, chuffs like a tiger does, you know, and I've heard tigers in the wild in India chuffing, you know, that I can't really do this. I was like, poof, poof. You know, that's what the tigers do. So I don't know why my cat does that. But you know, what Chris was saying is, like, we've been traveling around the world so much. Like we kind of, like, you know, you might be tempted to, like, oh, I'd love to have a falcon. You know what I mean? And actually, I did once when I found, like, a sparrowhawk that was in a drought. It was a young of the year and was dying. So I just kind of rehabilitated him and then let him go again. But you know, our connection with animals has always been in the wild. Like, for example, in Be the Creature, we would live with a group of animals for a month at a time, and those documentaries were based on whatever stories developed out of what was going on in their lives. So we would live with a pack of African wild dogs and just follow them around all day for a month.
You really would? I mean, that's really how that production was live with those creatures and study them for a month, not
Absolutely.
Just sort of drop in and be the celebrities?
No, we would drop in.
We'd
live
follow
in a tent.
Them around. Yeah, we'd sleep by their dens and, you know, get up with them and go off on the hunt with them and try to keep up. When we were following African wild dogs, it was so hard to keep up with them in the Jeep. I think during that adventure, we got 21 flat tires.
and when we were also with we were living with a group of chimpanzees in Kabale Forest, Uganda, and they would be hanging out. You know, we'd be hanging out with them. And then suddenly they signaled to each other somehow because they would all be moving down the trail. Like out on a hunt because they were out hunting monkeys. So we'd just grab our camera gear and try to keep up with them, and they'd split off. And I mean, you know, so it was, that's what we did on Be the Creature. And we never knew what was going to happen. We went out there without any story. You know, it just whatever the animals' lives, what was happening in their lives became our documentary.
And, you know, in regards to what you were asking about before, like seeing wild features in our domestic pets, we kind of have always looked at it the opposite way. We like to look at animals in terms of them being fellow creatures, mm-hmm. you know, rather than scientific objects, and kind of thinking about them in terms of, hey, what are they afraid of? What makes them happy, you know? And that's kind of the way that we look at animals.
Yeah. How do you balance that for kids, though? Because we know that kids who are able to experience wildlife, to even to touch it, to see it, to watch it, to be right there with it, are going to have a deeper appreciation for and probably a more active connection to the conservation of wildlands and wildlife. And yet you guys also have this ethos of leave the animal where it belongs. You know, we're not taking animals. You don't have them in your live show up on stage with you. So how do you balance that desire to show kids really up close and personal what animals are like, but also instill in them this idea that wild animals are wild and they need to stay that way?
Well, I totally agree with you. It's so important to have a connection with animals for kids. So for kids, having pets is so, so important. Like my son had a bearded dragon, right? Which is a lizard from Australia. But bearded dragons, you can get, you know, captive bred. And so, you know, kid gets a connection with a reptile. It was a great pet that we had. But, you know, I wouldn't want to go take a Komodo dragon out of the wild and make a Komodo dragon my pet for a lot of reasons with Komodo dragons, you know. So it's kind of just finding that balance, and it's all about learning about the animals and knowing what are good pets to have and what animals should better be left living free and in the wild.
And zoos are part of that too, you know. Zoos can provide something really great by showing people animals that they would normally not be able to see in the wild. The key there is that we continue to strive to make zoos good places mm-hmm. for animals to live and treat them properly. And there are probably some animals that shouldn't be in zoos at all.
Because like what?
Well, like, you know, animals that need a lot of space, like a wolverine. It's a roamer. You know, you don't see many in zoos at all. But, you know, bears, polar bears, they're all roaming animals and they need a lot of space.
Okay. You know, the other thing that's happening in the world right now is that people are gravitating towards cities, and we're shifting that balance of the human population in the world living rurally into a human population that the majority live in cities. And that changes our relationship with wildlife. I mean, yeah. In some ways, it's potentially a good thing because you can preserve landscapes and wildlife and have contiguous habitats. But it also means that there's a potential for less of a connection with wildlife and more kids and adults who are just experiencing wildlife either on TV or in zoos, like you were talking about.
Well, I agree that it's really important to get out into the wild and experience it for yourself, going on hikes in parks. You know, even if you're living in New York City, you can go out to Central Park and experience some nature, right? And wherever you can go to get outside and have your own wildlife experience is awesome. And frankly, that's why we end each show with keep on creature adventuring. We'll see you on the creature trail.
Yeah, and really one of the most gratifying things for us in terms of impact of our show is that if kids and their families turn off the show and go outside on an adventure.
Together,
you know, and actually experience nature. That's really the kind of excitement that we're trying to instill in the audience.
And we've gotten a lot of feedback that happens. We get a lot of letters saying, you know, our family goes out and has our own creature adventures. We go hiking. Sometimes they pretend they're me, Chris, and Aviva, you know, and Cokie. The parents get a certain role. Other times they just go out. And we've actually bumped into kids on the creature trail.
Really?
Like, yeah. We were out in the Tetons, and we were working on a show on bears, and we come around the corner, and there's a family who was watching Zaboomafoo, you know? And so it's like, yeah, see, we saw you out here.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, and you also have kids who give their own money and families who give mm-hmm. their money to you to help conservation and who say, you know, this is really important to you. I'm taking that money out of my piggy bank, and I'm going to give you my $3. You tell the story of the kid who gave you $3.17.
Yeah.
And that actually inspired us to do a big project during the Zaboomafoo time where we did a national tour where we did shows at zoos, and the Gap Foundation and Old Navy supported that. And for every kid that came out, they made a donation, and we raised over $1 million through Kid Action. It was actually the kids who did it by coming out, and we our nonprofit Crap Brothers Creature Hero Society purchased wildlife habitat for grizzly bears out on the Rocky Mountain front in Montana, and so that land is just protected for mother grizzly bears coming out of the mountains and giving their cubs, you know, some sustenance in the spring. There's also wolves and everything there, too. So it's really a really important piece of wildlife habitat. And kids protected it.
And kids voted on what animal they wanted to help. We did a, you know, online survey and a survey throughout the tour. And they wanted to help grizzly bears. And so that's what we did.
Is that what you expected? Did you think grizzlies were going to win?
No. We just hoped they were going to say, like, manatees. Because how could we, like, buy, like, water?
Yes, grizzlies
water
are.
Water habitat.
We got a question from Erica, who is watching our Facebook Live video and asks, Martin is wearing blue. Is Chris wearing green? It looks like it. Do you wear blue and green every day just in case someone recognizes you? And what Erica's referring to here is that you wear blue and green on your shows. And Martin, you always wear blue
always
on the
show. Well, I can tell you one thing. I don't wear green.
Ever.
That's Chris's color.
So do you do this out in public? You purposely wear the colors you're supposed to wear?
Sometimes when we're out doing stuff related to Wildcrats, for sure, because it gets confusing. If I'm wearing green and he's wearing blue, or if I'm wearing red, it just doesn't make sense.
But this is radio. You didn't have to dress in character.
Well, we like our colors. We do like our colors
like
in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been caught wearing a different color before, but...
Let's go to some of our kid callers. Aiden is on the line with us from Morrisville. Hi, Aiden. Go right ahead.
How fast do pelicans go?
Okay, so Aiden, you're asking how fast do peregrine falcons go? Do you guys?
Yeah.
So you're getting some tough questions on the fly now. You know how
fast? Oh, yeah, we know. That's a good question. They can go about 220 miles per hour in a stoop. And a stoop is when they tuck their wings and drop from the sky like a stone. And so they're
more
harnessing.
More like a missile.
They're harnessing the force of gravity. And that's one of the things we do in Wildcrats, too, is... Like, we look at animals in terms of their creature powers, those special, amazing things that each animal can do. And they're often tied to a science concept. Like, in this case, great question, Aiden. Their speed, their creature power of speed is tied to the force of gravity.
Gravity. And so we always put a curriculum element into the show, like, because that's a physics concept, right? So you can do a show on skunks where you introduce a chemistry concept. So we're always very mindful of that, you know. And one other thing about Wildcrats, it's primarily about turning kids onto animals and introducing them to our fellow creatures, but it's also about turning kids onto science, you know, and STEM content.
Yeah, we even did an episode on electric eels and were able to talk about electricity through animals, right?
Yeah, about currents.
How much do you know when you're starting out and how much do you have to do the research? I mean, you must have a body of knowledge now that helps you and animals that you can think of, oh, this is similar to when we looked at this other animal and it's a very similar, you know, biology or chemistry. But you must also have to do a lot of research and have a team that does some research with you.
Oh, yeah. And every episode we do, every animal. Even a familiar animal, we learned something new. You know, one great example is walrus, which was one of our first episodes of Wildcrats. I was amazed when I was working on the script and the research that walrus have this thing called a pharyngeal throat sac that they can blow up. And it's like a built-in life preserver that allows them to float on stormy Arctic seas and take naps.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know that. You know, and I knew a lot about walruses, I thought, right? So every episode, we're learning something new, you know, and it's so exciting. And then we can share that with kids. And we really try to find a lot of information that you won't find in, like, the general texts.
Chris, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that last point. We really dig for that information, you know, that little known information and sometimes the cutting edge information that scientists are just discovering about animals. Because, you know, there are always new things to learn about animals. And that's one thing that we find every time we go on a creature adventure as well, is that, you know, it's really magical when you see, for example, a Tasmanian devil climbing a tree. At the time that what we saw and filmed that, years ago, that
80s,
was something they were 90s. Just finding out that young Tasmanian devils do.
So to get away from the older ones.
To get away from the
oh,
older
really?
Ones.
That's why they're doing
and,
it?
Yeah. And to get high to smell out the carcass, but also to get away from the older
ones. And if you're ever on Komodo Island, checking out Komodo dragons, you'll notice you only see big ones walking around, right? And you're like, well, where are all the Komodo dragon hatchlings? And you look up in the trees and they're all up there living on the branches. They have a totally different lifestyle when they're young because That's where they can survive. If they come to the ground, they usually get eaten by, you know, the bigger ones.
And there's a parallel right there that you were talking about, two different creatures, a similar method. And even grizzly bears use that, too. The young grizzly bears are good climbers.
Yeah.
Male grizzly bears are always out to get them.
Mm.
Right. Yeah.
See, we're all learning something new here, and more to come with the Kratts as we have this conversation wide-ranging about their influences, how they do their work, but also we're getting a lot of kids and adults who have some animal questions, and you are welcome to share them. We are going to put them to Chris and Martin, see how much they remember about all of their adventures over the last 20 years. Today we're talking animals with the Kratts, Martin and Chris. They are known to legions of children and former children and parents of children and parents of former children as the hosts of several popular TV shows that have introduced kids to the remarkable world of animals. Mary posts, seeing Martin and Chris brings back so many great memories of watching Zaboomafoo with my son, who is now 20. We had so many good laughs from the many times you both fell into large mud puddles.
Yes, that happened very often.
Yes, and there was often a closet that remarkably never got cleaned, and things kept falling on you all the time.
We call them crap falls.
You know, on that note, we actually got a note as well from Angela, who posted on my Facebook page saying, my now 19-year-old texted me when he found out that Zaboomafoo had died because he was so sad. He loved the Kratts. So Zaboomafoo was a lemur, and you had a puppet lemur, but you also had a real lemur who was a character and was Zaboomafoo. Can you describe a little bit for people who are less familiar with Zaboomafoo how that worked?
Well, Zaboomafoo came out of, like, when I was at Duke, they have Duke Lemur Center, where they breed endangered lemurs in captivity. And, you know, because there's Madagascar, their only home is losing a lot of habitat. And so I was a student keeper, you know, feeding all the lemurs and everything. And then we went off on our adventures. And one of my professor, Pat Wright, she had discovered the golden bamboo lemur in Madagascar, a new species in the 80s. It was like crazy that happened, right? She's just so amazing. And so Chris and I went to her research station to do some videos on lemurs. And that was like kind of our second expedition when we were trying to get Kratts creatures off the ground. And we did Kratts creatures, and then years later, we were like thinking about our preschool show, and we came back to lemurs. And so when we filmed it, Duke is where we went to film Jovian, the lemur,
the real live lemur
who was Zaboomafoo. So we basically took the set of Animal Junction down there and set up a set where we could film under a big circus tent where we could film Jovian jumping all over the place. So Jovian was the main lemur, but his mom – Flavia and his dad Nigel also sometimes filled in for him. So it was a family of three lemurs that were the real Zaboomafoo. And then we had the puppet in the studio and we kind of intercut them, you know. So Jovian lived a long life and he had a lot of kids and grandkids. And
They were actually featured in his obituary. Jovian leaves, I think it was like 9 children.
Yes, exactly.
20 grandchildren, two more on the way or something.
And he
like
was
that.
A really gentle lemur. He was awesome. Yeah, we had a lot of good interactions with him.
Let's go to Cadence, who's calling in from Windsor. Hi, Cadence. You're on.
What's your favorite animal that you did an adventure with?
So what's your favorite animal adventure? Nathaniel in Norwich, who's 8, also wants to know what your favorite creature adventure is. So Cadence and Nathaniel are both really interested.
Oh, our favorite creature adventure or our favorite creature that we haven't adventured with yet?
Oh, well, why don't you give us both?
Well, I'll do one of our favorite that we've done.
Yeah.
One of them, I mean, there are so many, it's really hard to pick. Oh, but one of them that comes to mind is when we were swimming with spotted dolphins in the Caribbean. And these were wild dolphins, you know, not trained ones or anything. But we jumped in the water and you start swimming as actively as you can. And they're such smart, curious, fun-loving animals that they came over and they started copying our moves. If we did a twist in the water, they would twist. If we did a roll, they would do that roll. And they were basically playing with us for a while. And that's really special when a wild animal comes to check you out and play with you.
And they decide that they want to play with you.
Yes, exactly.
So, Martin, what about for you? Well, either maybe an adventure you haven't had?
Yeah, for season 6 of Wild Kratts, one animal that I really want to do an episode on and a creature power suit of is the snow leopard.
Oh,
I've been dying to get there to see the snow leopard because they're a really cool big cat.
But they're hard to find.
Yeah, really hard to find. Yeah.
So do you really think you're going to be able to do that?
We're going to try. Yeah. I mean, one of our when we were first starting out with Kretz Creatures, we went looking for the giant river otters in the Amazon. And we went way, way upriver where if you go on a little farther, there were uncontacted indigenous people still and you weren't allowed to go there. And we found there were only 5,000 in the world, and we found a whole family of giant river otters that we would that we basically followed around in a little boat and filmed. And that actually became the pilots for Kratz Creatures. They're featured in the pilot. Yeah.
We got a question from Liz who says, my 3-year-old wants to know, what's your favorite Vermont creature?
Oh, that's awesome. I'd have to say the fisher.
Really?
I've seen 2 fishers in all my time here, and they are awesome.
They are awesome.
Yeah, they are really.
I've never seen one in the wild.
No, I've seen 2, only 2, you know, in all the time. So, you know, keep looking, you'll get lucky. But they are a misunderstood creature.
They are not cats, for one thing.
They're not cats. They're big mustelids, you know, big weasels, and they're just really, really spectacular creatures. So I'm very pro fisher.
Chris, do you have a favorite Vermont creature?
You know, I'll go with the goshawk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're really cool. And I get to see them fairly regularly around my place here. It's really, really interesting to watch. One time I watched them hunt a mourning dove, and it was just spectacular.
See, you guys are going predator. My favorite Vermont creature.
What is it? Yeah, what's yours?
The eastern salamander, the red
eft.
Oh,
yes.
I mean, they're just so beautiful. Those and when they're on land like that yeah. bright orange color, and then right. you can see them get big and turn a little bit darker and get ready to go back in the water. And I learned recently, sorry, this is host prerogative here, about something called the Unken reflex. Have you ever seen this?
So no, what
when,
is it? We'll
when
put
a
it on
salamander
our show.
Is, you know, crawling along and then it thinks something is going to come and get it, it curls up
into a U shape. Right.
And I one time saw it and thought that somebody had ridden over this salamander with a bicycle because it looked like
it had.
Yeah. But it's actually a defense mechanism that they do, partly to look dead and partly to show that they're sort of bigger and scarier.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it worked on you.
It totally worked on me. I ran away. Yeah. Yeah. Liz, good question. Let's go to Parker. Who's calling in from Cabot. Hi, Parker. You're on the air.
I had a question of have they ever transferred an animal to another habitat so they could live better?
Well, you know, one thing we Parker. Did while filming for Wildcrats relatively recently is we had the opportunity to re-release a Florida panther back into the wild in the Everglades,
yeah.
and they are super endangered animals. And I'll tell
actually,
you,
that's in our Florida Panther episode.
Yeah, it's,
yeah,
it's in the
live action
about
part.
Florida Panthers.
Yeah, have you seen that one, Parker?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, good. Yeah, that was spectacular. Watching that panther run back into the wild was amazing.
Actually, and that reminds me, I think maybe my favorite is catamount, my favorite Vermont animal.
Hmm.
How did I forget that?
Because they don't live here anymore.
I think they do. I'm pulling for them. Yeah. You know, actually, we did a Tasmanian tiger episode, and I don't know if you heard the recent reports that they have sightings, credible sightings in northern Queensland now.
Wow.
Yeah, so who knows?
And it's true. I mean, there may be catamounts that are passing through, not yet a breeding population, but you think they're coming back, Martin?
I think so.
All right.
I hope so.
Linda in West Glover sent us a note to remind us that Wildcrats isn't just for kids. She says, I'm 75 years old and I'm addicted to the show. I discovered you a few years ago. I traditionally watch the PBS NewsHour every evening. Then I used to switch over to one of the major networks to get their take on the news. One night, I got so frustrated with all the advertisements in the network news broadcasts that I started clicking around to different channels to see what else was on. I discovered Wildcrats and I was instantly hooked on the show. I love the combination of the live introduction and wind up to the show with animation in the main part. The animation is wonderful. So are the animated characters themselves. How do you get the animals to be so expressive?
Oh,
that is so great.
That's
Thank
awesome.
You for that comment. Yeah, one of the things that has been amazing about the show that we're really proud of is its broad audience range. Like we have kids, you know, in preschool watching the show. We have older kids, 10, 11, 12 years old watching
college
the show.
Kids.
And then, of course, we have the woman that wrote in. So we're really proud of that, of being able to it's unusual for a show and being able to reach so many people. Yeah,
but if you love animals, you love animals. It doesn't matter what age, right?
All right, so there's that. There's the love of animals. But we also got a note from Daria who says, my kids were big fans of Zaboomafoo. My mom friends used to joke, the kids watched for the Leapin' Lemur, the moms watched for the Kratt Brothers. Which I know this is not the first time you've gotten that. You had a lot of parental fans who watched for what they thought were the two cute guys who were doing the show. That must be kind of an odd feeling as you do a show for kids.
Oh, yeah, I guess. No, it was great. You know, it's a family show. So, you know, it's we're really glad for our audiences. And actually, you know what? I just remembered something.
That's a nice turn. Nice pivot there, Martin.
No, but one of the things when we really knew that Kratz Creatures was hitting an audience, we were on a tour like a month after it had launched. And we were doing a book tour, and we're at Barnes & Noble here in Burlington. And suddenly we had this crowd come out that it got – we were on the second floor. You know how the escalator goes up to the second floor? And the crowd got so big lineup on the second floor that the fire marshal had to come and turn off the escalator because people couldn't get off the escalator anymore. So then we were like, wow, this show might be becoming a hit, you know? And that happened here in Vermont. Yeah.
Let's go to Max, who's on the line with us from Lindenville. Hi, Max. You're on Vermont Edition. Go right ahead.
Have you ever held a piranha?
Ooh. Have you ever held a piranha?
Yes, we have held a piranha down in the Pantanal. The Pantanal is in Brazil, and it's the largest wetland in the world, and there are lots of piranhas down there. And so we were filming capybaras, which are the largest rodents in the world. And some other things down there. And yeah, we found some piranhas.
Yeah, and the reason we held them is because we were fishing for them and then we had them for dinner.
So how did you keep your fingers out of their mouth?
Oh, you just have to be really careful. You don't want to slip, right, when you're getting the hook out. Yeah, it's a little tricky.
Jenny in Cornwall says, please send along our thanks for such a fantastic program. My son retained so much information from watching Wild Kratts. It was really impactful in such a positive way. We still talk about honey badgers.
Oh, yeah. Great. That was one of the episodes of season one.
So let's hear from another kid who's calling in, Adeline, who's calling in from Poultney. Hi, Adeline.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi,
go right ahead.
Hi, Adeline.
How fast is a cheetah?
Ooh, another good question.
Yeah, cheetahs run about 70 miles an hour. And I think on 89, you can have your parents drive that fast and show you, okay, how fast that is. Just look out the window and you'll see everything whizzing by. That's how fast.
Or put your hand out the window.
Able to drive that fast. 89, but almost.
Legally, maybe not. Right, so much. Right.
For science, for education,
right.
Maybe.
We got a question from Claire who says, my whole family adores your show, and many a dinner and bedtime, we the parents learn wild and wonderful animal facts from around the globe. Thank you. Do you have some women scientist friends from around the globe who could be your special guests in the intros so that my son and daughter can see women tromping around the wilds being their awesome selves too?
Well, that's a great question. And you know what? The Aviva character, we really wanted to make sure there was a strong female presence in Wild Kratts. So that's why the character Aviva, who is actually inspired by female scientists at MIT who were working on different research and engineering. Yeah. So basically that's why all the technology and all the engineering and invention comes out of a female character's work.
So. And we do meet lots of female scientists in the field doing great research. And oftentimes in some of the live action segments, we are with them learning about their field work. Like I think the burrowing owl episode, the burrowing owl and elf owls, we saw some really great research that was being conducted by some female scientists. And same with dolphins.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any siblings? Are you two the only children?
We have sisters, twin sisters in between us. Like I'm the oldest, and we have twin sisters, Christine and Susan, and then Chris.
And are they animal lovers too?
Well, our sister's a veterinarian, so yeah.
We were all biology majors in college.
It's true. Yeah.
And what are they when you're all together for family gatherings? Do they gently tease you? Or are they jealous? What about having the two celebrity brothers?
Oh no, not at all. It's just like the old days, and now we got all of us have kids running around, you know. So, yeah.
Well, how do you balance that? I mean, you're doing all of this travel with your live shows, and you're still doing show production.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mean to age you, but you're middle-aged guys now, and you don't look like you're slowing down, but, you know, it's a different lifestyle when you're 20 than when you're 45. So how do you balance that life-work balance?
Well, we're not living in the Amazon for 6 months anymore. Intense, for sure. but you know, actually, that having our own kids kind of played a part in the development of Wildcrats. I mean, it was kind of two things. We had our own kids, and it was hard to be away for months at a time, you know, filming Be the Creature, you know, with being out in Uganda for a month with chimpanzees, and our kids were at home growing up. So we didn't want to miss out on that. And also, one of the toughest things about doing wildlife documentaries is, you know, animals do certain things, but you can't always get it on film, right? Like,
right.
You could spend months and months out trying to get, you know, giant river otter having an encounter with a jaguar, but you might never get it even if you spend 10 years out there. So we realized with those two reasons, if we did an animated show, we could show everything that animals do and we could be home more. So that contributed to the creation of Wildcrats.
And besides that, you know, like all our previous shows have been live action, as Martin mentioned, and there's more of a documentary feel to any live action show, right? But with animation, we were able to have more control over the story as well as the behaviors, like Martin was talking about. We can have creature power suits and villains. And so, you know, all those things contributed.
Yeah. And a lot of Wildcrats is about really putting yourself in the place of the animal. What if I could fly like a peregrine falcon? What if I could swim like a sea turtle? You know, and so really the creature power suits are a representation of that, like experiencing these amazing abilities of animals. And that's at the core of Wildcrats.
And how involved are you then once the animation part of the story takes over?
Well, Chris and I write all the scripts, and then we have a great team of researchers and researchers and animators who bring it all together.
Yeah. So we're involved throughout the process. I mean, this is why we're doing this. You know, we would never be taken away from the TV show to do other things.
Today, we are talking with Chris and Martin Kratt. They're behind the educational TV shows Kratt's Creatures, Zaboomafoo, Be the Creature, Wild Kratts. Let's go to Hadrian, calling in from Richmond. Hi, Hadrian.
Why are saber-toothed tigers a sphinx, but regular tigers not a sphinx?
All right, so why are saber-toothed tigers extinct, but regular tigers are not extinct?
Oh,
really good question. Yeah, well, you know, saber-toothed tigers were bigger. They focused on bigger prey.
Like woolly rhino and woolly mammoth.
And usually, you know, oftentimes what happens with extinction is animals that need more space, need more resources, they become extinct earlier. So, you know, probably some of its prey species became extinct. Then the saber-toothed tigers couldn't make it either. But plus they live in different parts of the world. Like tigers lived in rainforests, and saber-toothed tigers lived in North America where glaciers hit and everything else. So
while we're talking about animals that are extinct, Dahlia wants to know about animals that aren't extinct. She's 5, and she says, what are the species that have survived the longest on Earth, and why have they been able to stick around for so long?
Okay, well, you can see one of them. Now that spring's coming in summer, look for dragonflies. Pretty much the exact same kind of dragonflies that might land, you know, on you or on your porch, they were landing on dinosaurs.
Whoa.
Yeah, so they've been around a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. And when Martin says look for dragonflies, one of my favorite things to see in nature is they spend the first part of their life in the water. And they're predators in the water that can even grab minnows and eat minnows. But they come out when it's ready to turn into a dragonfly, kind of like a butterfly does. They come out of the water. They sit on a rock, and they just bust out of their skeleton. And they come out like an alien, and they look like a totally different creature. Like when they're in the water, they're just little bug-like things, but then they just become flies.
I've never seen that.
They pump up their wings, and
it's amazing.
That's so cool. All right, let's hear from Tanner in Dorset. Hi, Tanner.
Hi. I really like your TV show.
Thanks, Tanner.
And have either of you been attacked or injured by a wild animal?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Chris, it was really funny because Chris once got tackled by a Komodo dragon.
That is said like a brother. Yeah, well, it was really funny.
What? Yeah, that's true. I turned to run away from this Komodo dragon and I tripped. And before I knew it, he was climbing on top of me. Fortunately, I got my foot under his chest.
Yeah.
And so I was able to like give him a little shove to the side and skittle out of there.
Yeah, because they have sharp claws and they are not nice.
Oh, yeah, no, but no. But the amazing thing was afterwards I look over at Martin and he was standing there with his mouth wide open in surprise.
Laughing.
And he hadn't moved an inch to help me.
Well, it kind of happened fast, you know.
Yeah, excuses.
What are you going to do when I get crap? No, oh, and one time also we were following lions all around in Africa in our open Jeep, and we fell because they fall asleep a lot, right? And it was the middle of the night and they fell asleep and we fell asleep in the Jeep. And I woke up because like something was licking my boot. And I looked up and there was a big male lion because my leg had like gone off the side of the Jeep. He was just tasting. He didn't take a bite, so I was lucky there.
That's kind of a far cry from opening your tent to let the snakes in.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there sleeping in the Jeep and the lion is licking your leg.
Yeah.
Pretty good life, though. Pretty good life that
amazing,
you guys have had
yeah.
so far, and pretty amazing adventures that you're also able to bring to kids. You're going to keep doing this for a
oh,
while?
Oh, yeah. As long as we can.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Wildcrats alone, we have an almost a limitless supply of episodes to do. Like, we can't get to animals fast enough. Put it this way, one of our new episodes is on penguins. You know, we're 138 episodes into Wildcrats, and there are animals like snow leopards we haven't done episodes, pygmy marmosets. I mean, you could just rattle on and on.
We got a great letter recently from a kid who was like, yeah, you know, they don't understand like the business of making TV shows and how much time and money it takes and everything. They said, you know, I've seen all the episodes already. I haven't seen any new ones recently. Can you guys make some new ones faster? I'm thinking maybe you can't think of any animals to do shows on, so here's a list.
Well, all right. Well, we're going to look forward to seeing you guys tick off all the animals on that list. Chris and Martin Kratt are behind educational TV shows, Kratt's Creatures, Zaboomafoo, Be the Creature, Wildcrats. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us. What a pleasure to talk with you both.
Thanks a lot, Jane. It's great to be here.
I hope you enjoyed listening to The Kratts. If you have your own animal adventures, let us know about them. Send us a picture or a note, or record yourself talking about your favorite animals. You can send pictures or files or questions of any kind on any subject to questions@butwhykids.org. Have an adult help you record them on a smartphone. Tell us your name and where you live and how old you are. But Why is produced by Melody Baudette and me, Jane Lindholm, for Vermont Public Radio. Our theme music is by Luke Reynolds. We'll be back in 1 week with an all-new episode. Until then, stay curious. Remember our question from before the episode started about salamanders and why they have to live in wet environments? Well, salamanders, like all amphibians, need to keep their skin moist. But water is also important because in spring, our salamanders in the Northeast travel to water to breed. Here's herpetologist Kate Kelly.
So vernal pools fill up in the spring with rain and snow melt, and they will dry out at some point during the year.
How do those mole salamanders, and when we talk about mole salamanders, let's talk about one in particular, the spotted salamander. It's this beautiful, pretty big salamander, kind of grayish with bright yellow spots on it. It's been up in the hills. How does it get to the vernal pool?
Yeah, so in the spring, usually on these first rainy nights of the spring, has to be above freezing, but not by much. They will start to come out from their underground burrows where they've spent the winter and migrate, just walk over the land, to these pools where they're going to breed.
In those pools, salamanders will lay egg masses of 50 to 100 eggs. That's where the young will live out the first part of their life cycle. Spring is a great time to get out and try to see amphibians on the move on dark, rainy nights, or to find their egg masses in springtime pools, called vernal pools, deep in the forest and even in roadside ditches. You can learn more about this in our series, Northeast Nature. In this monthly series, we learn more about what's happening outside and offer curriculum and activity guides for all kinds of students. Learn more at butwhykids.org/nature.
From PR.